He glanced over again, studying my face. It means that they only succeeded in blowing up the Senate portion of it. President Gray's control of the government was only supposed to last until the new congressional elections could be held. But then the riots started when the PSF started pulling kids from schools without their parents' permission. And then, of course, the economy tanked and the country defaulted on its debt. You'd be surprised how little voice you have when you lose everything. And everyone just let him? The thought turned my stomach. No, no one just let him. It's chaos out here right now, Ruby. Gray keeps trying to tighten his control, and every day more and more people are rioting or breaking whatever laws we have left just to get food on the table. My dad was killed in a riot. Kate turned around to face the back seat so quickly the car actually swerved into the other lane. I had known Martin was awake for at least 10 minutes. His breathing had become much lighter, and he had stopped doing his weird little lip licking and grunts. I just hadn't wanted to talk to him, or to interrupt Kate. The people in our neighborhood robbed his store for food, and he couldn't even defend himself. How are you feeling? Sugar coated Kate's words, almost as sweet as the vanilla air freshener twirling around in front of us. Okay, I guess. He sat up, trying to pat down his floppy brown hair into something presentable. Martin was round all over. His cheeks drooped and his uniform shirt might have been a size too small, but he hadn't started growing like the other kids in his cabin. I had maybe an inch or two on him, and I was short, with an average build. He couldn't have been more than a year younger than I was. I'm glad, Kate said. There's a water bottle back there for you if you need it. We'll be stopping in about an hour to switch cars again. Where are we going? We're meeting with a friend in Marlington, West Virginia. He'll have a change of clothes and identification papers for both of you. We're almost there now. I thought for sure Martin had dropped right back off into sleep until he asked, Where are we going after that? The radio flashed to life, snatching up bits and pieces of Led Zeppelin before losing it again to static and silence. I could feel Martin's eyes burning holes into the back of my neck. I tried not to turn around to stare right back, but it was the closest I had been to a boy my age since we had been sorted. After years of living on opposite sides of the main trail in Thurmond, it was unnerving to suddenly be presented with all his little details. The freckles I hadn't noticed on his face, for instance, or the way his eyebrows seemed to merge into one. What was I supposed to say to him? I'm so glad I found you. We're the last of us. One was the truth, and one couldn't be further from it. We're going to regroup with the League at their southern headquarters. After we get there, you can decide if you want to stay, she said. I know you've been through a lot, so you don't have to make any choices now. Just know that you'll be safe if you stay with me. The feeling of freedom rose in me so fast that I had to chase it down to squash it along with my swelling heart. It was still too dangerous. There was a chance that the PSFs could catch up to us, that I'd be back in camp or dead before we even got to Virginia. Martin watched me, his dark eyes narrowed. I watched as his pupils seemed to shrink, and I felt a tickle in the back of my mind. The same one I always felt when my abilities wanted to be let out and used. What the hell? My fingers dug into the armrests, but I didn't turn back around to see if he was still at it. I glanced up into the rearview mirror only once, watching as he leaned back against the seat and crossed his arms over his chest with a huff. A sore at the corner of his mouth looked angry and red, like he had been scratching at the scab. I want to go where I can do what I couldn't do at Thurmond, Martin said finally. I didn't want to know what he meant by that. I'm a lot more powerful than you think, he continued. You won't need anyone else after you see what I can do. Kate smiled. That's what I'm counting on. I knew you'd understand. What about you, Ruby? She asked, turning to me. Are you willing to make a difference? If I said no, would they let me go? If I asked to go to my parents' house in Salem, would they take me there, no questions asked? To Virginia Beach if I wanted to see my grandmother? Out of the country, if that's what I really wanted? They were both looking at me, wearing mirrored looks of urgency and excitement. I wish I could have felt it. I wish I could have shared in the security they were feeling about their choice. But I wasn't absolutely certain of what I wanted. I only knew what I didn't want. "Take me anywhere," I said. "Anywhere but home." Martin picked at the sore with grubby nails until blood appeared, and he licked it off his lips and the tip of his fingers, watching me like he expected me to ask for a taste. I turned back to Kate, a question dying on my lips, because for a second, just one, all I could think about was the sight of fire and smoke rising from the sharp lines of her shoulders and the door she couldn't open. 7. We reached Marlington city limits at 7 o'clock in the morning, just as the sun decided to reappear from behind the thick layer of clouds. It colored the nearby trees a faint violet and glinted off the wall of mist that had gathered over the asphalt. By then, we had driven past several highway exits that were barricaded with junk, rails, or deserted cars, done up either by the National Guard to contain hostile towns and cities, or by the residents themselves, to keep unwanted looters and visitors out of already hard-hit areas. The road itself, however, had been silent for hours on end, which meant that we were due for some sort of human interaction sooner or later. It came sooner, in the form of a red semi-truck. I scooted down in my seat as it whipped past us. It was headed clear in the opposite direction, but I had a perfect view of the gold swan painted on its side. "They're everywhere," Kate said, following my line of sight. "That was probably a shipment to Thurmond." It was the first true sign of life we'd seen in all of our driving, most likely because we were cruising down Dead Man's Highway in the middle of butt-freaking nowhere, but that single truck was enough to scare Kate. "Get in the back seat," she said, "and stay down." I did as I was told. Unbuckling my seatbelt, I twisted between the front seats and threaded my legs through them. Martin watched me with glassy eyes. At one point, I felt his hand slip against my arm like he was trying to help me. I recoiled, slipping down in the space between the back seat and the front. My back was against the door and my knees were against my chest, but we were still too close. When he grinned, it was enough to make my skin crawl. There were boys at Thurmond. Plenty of them, in fact. But any activity that involved the commingling of the sexes, whether that was eating together, sharing cabins, or even passing one another on the way to the washrooms, was strictly forbidden. The PSFs and camp controllers enforced the rule with the same level of severity they did with the kids who, however intentionally or unintentionally, used their abilities, which, of course, only drove everyone's already hormone-drunk brains crazier and turned some of my cabin mates into an elite breed of covert stalkers. Maybe I didn't remember the right way to interact with someone of the opposite gender, but I'm pretty sure Martin didn't either. "Fun, huh?" he said. I thought he was kidding until I saw the too eager look in his eyes. The itching came again, the tingling sensation of yet another attempt to peer inside my head, dread trailing down the length of my spine like a freezing fingertip. I pressed up against the door and kept my eyes on Kate, but it wasn't far enough. We are nothing alike, I realized. We had been brought to the same place, lived in the same kind of terror, but he was so... I needed to change the subject and distract him from whatever it was he was trying to do. The AC was on, but you never would have known by the heat he was giving off. "Do you think Thurmond has noticed we're gone?" I asked, breaking the silence. Kate switched off her headlights. "I would think so. The PSFs don't have the manpower to launch a full hunt for us, but I'm positive they've put two and two together about what you are." "What do you mean?" I asked. "That we're orange?" "I thought you said they already knew. That was why we had to leave so quickly."
"They were on the verge of finding out," Kate explained. "They were testing the orange and red frequencies in that calm control. I don't think any of them expected it to work that quickly. That's why we had to get you out, and fast."
"Frequencies," Martin repeated. You mean they added something to it?
That's exactly right. Kate smiled at him in the rearview mirror. The League got wind of their new method of trying to weed out kids who had been labeled incorrectly when they were brought into camp. You know that adults can't hear the calm control, I'm sure.
We both nodded.
The scientists there have been working on frequencies that only certain kinds of Psi youth can pick up and process. There are some wavelengths you all can hear, and others that only greens, or blues, or, in this instance, oranges can detect.
It made sense, but it didn't make it any less horrifying.
You know, I've been wondering, Kate began, how did you two do it? You especially, Ruby. You went into that camp so young. How did you get around their sorting?
I just did, I said. I told the man who was supposed to run my tests that I was green. He listened.
That's weak, Martin interrupted, looking right at me. You probably didn't even have to use your powers.
I didn't like to think of them as powers. That seemed to imply they were something to celebrate, and they were most definitely not.
I told someone to trade places with me when they started separating all the O's and R's out. Didn't want to go down with them, you know.
Martin leaned forward. So I took one of the new greens aside, who was about my age, and made him and that warden think he was me. Same for anyone who asked, one by one.
Cool, huh?
The disgust coiled in my gut. He didn't feel sorry about doing any of this, that was clear. Maybe I had lied about what I was, but I hadn't damned another kid to do so. Was that what having control over your orange abilities turned you into? Some kind of monster? Someone who could do whatever you wanted because no one was capable of stopping you? Was that what being powerful was like?
So, you can make people believe they're someone they're not? Kate said. I thought oranges could only command someone to do something, sort of like hypnosis.
Nah, Martin said. I can do much more than that. I get people to do what I want by making them feel what I want them to feel.
Like that kid I switched places with. I made him feel too scared to stay in his cabin. Made him feel like it would be a good idea to pretend to be me. Anyone who questioned me, I made them feel crazy for doing it. So I can sort of command people to do stuff, but it's more like if I want someone to hurt someone else, I have to make him feel really, really pissed at the person I want him to attack.
Huh, Kate said. Is it the same for you, Ruby?
No, not at all, in fact. I looked down at my hands, to the dark mud still caked under my fingernails. The thought of revealing exactly what I could do made them shake in a way I hadn't expected.
I don't throw feelings into someone. I just see things, at least as far as I knew.
Wow. Wow.
I know I keep saying this, but you two are really something amazing. I keep thinking of all the things you could do. How much help you'll be to us.
Incredible.
Twisting around, I lifted my head just enough to look out to the road. Behind me, I felt Martin grab a few loose strands of my hair and begin to twirl them around his fingers. I could see the reflection of my round face in the rearview mirror, the big eyes that seemed almost sleepy, thick, dark brows, full lips. I could see the revulsion slide over it. I shouldn't have, but I took the bait. Martin barely had time to brace himself before I whirled around and slapped that same clammy hand back down into his lap. My next breath caught in my throat. Do not touch me. I wanted to say, don't think I won't break every single finger on that hand. But he was grinning at me, his tongue on his cold sore, his hand rising again. Only this time, he wagged his fingers in my direction, taunting. I leaned forward, ready to grab that same wrist, to shut the pig down, cold, hard, and fast. But that was exactly what he wanted. The realization flowed thick and slow through me, inching its way to my guts. He wanted me to show him what I could do, to be willing to fuel my abilities with the same kind of viciousness pumping through him.
I turned my back on him again, my fists tightening with his triumphant chuckles. Had the anger even been mine, or had he pushed it into me? "Everything okay back there?" Kate called over her shoulder. "Hang on tight, we're almost there." Whatever Marlington normally looked like, it was that much worse under the cover of gray clouds and a layer of misty rain, strange and terrible enough to distract even Martin from the games he was playing with my head. The deserted shopping centers with broken storefronts were disturbing enough before we cut into the first neighborhood of little brown and gray and white houses. We passed a number of empty cars along the street and in driveways, some with bright orange "for sale" signs still stuck in the back window, but all of them covered in a thick skin of brown, rotting leaves. The cars were surrounded by piles of junk and boxes, furniture, rugs, computers, entire rooms full of rusting, useless electronics. "What happened here?" I asked. "It's a little hard to explain, but do you remember what I told you about the economy? After the attack in D.C., the government was thrown into a tailspin, and one thing led to another. We couldn't pay off our national debt. We couldn't provide money to the states. We couldn't provide benefits. We couldn't pay government employees. Even small towns like this one didn't escape. People lost their jobs when companies failed, and then they lost their homes because they could no longer pay for them. The whole thing is terrible." "But where is everyone?" "In tent cities, outside of the big cities like Richmond and D.C., trying to find work. I know a lot of people are trying to go west because they think there's going to be more work and food available, but, well, I imagine it'll be safer. There's a lot of looting and vigilante groups roaming about here." I was almost afraid to ask, "What about the police? Why didn't they stop them?" Kate bit her bottom lip. "It's like I just told you. The states couldn't afford to pay their salaries, so they were let go. Most of the police work is done by volunteers now, or the National Guard. That's why you need to stay close to me, okay?" It only got worse when we passed the elementary school. The pastel jungle gym, or whatever was left of it, was stained black and twisting toward the ground. Clusters of birds were perched along its broken backbone, watching us as we blew past the stop sign and turned the corner. We passed what must have once been the cafeteria, but the entire right side of the building had crumbled in on itself. The rainbow mural of faces and suns painted on the other side of the building was visible, just beyond the tangled web of yellow police tape blocking off the wreckage. "Someone planted a bomb in the cafeteria, just before the first collection," Kate said. "Set it off during lunchtime."
"The government?"
Martin pressed. But Kate didn't have an answer for him. She switched her blinker on as she made another right, signaling her turn to no one in particular. A city with no people. My breath fogged up the window as we left that neighborhood behind and sped toward another strip mall. We passed a Starbucks, a nail salon, a McDonald's, and another nail salon before Kate finally pulled into a gas station. I saw the other car immediately, a tan SUV, a kind I had never seen before. The man leaning against it wasn't pumping gas. That would have been impossible. All of the gas pumps were beaten in, their hoses and nozzles strewn across the concrete. Kate honked, but the man had already spotted us and was waving. He was young, too, at least as young as Kate, with a small build and dark brown hair that fell over his forehead. As we got closer, the smile on his face bloomed into something brilliant, and I recognized him then as the man from Kate's thoughts, the one she had pictured in dazzling colors and lights as we left Thurmond. Kate barely had the car in park before she threw her door open and bolted straight for him. I heard her let out a sharp laugh as she threw her arms around his neck, knocking into him with so much force that the sunglasses flew off his face. Martin's sweaty palm touched the spot where my neck met my shirt collar, giving me a light squeeze, and that was it for me. I pushed the car door open and stepped outside, whether Kate wanted me to or not. The air was damp with a thin mist of rain, brightening the trees and grass into an electric green. It clung to my cheeks and hair, a welcome relief after spending the last few hours confined with Martin the mouth breather, who seemed to be coated with something perpetually sticky. "They found Nora about a half hour after you left.
the man said as I walked up. They sent two units after you. Did you run into any trouble?
None.
Kate had an arm around his middle. But I'm not surprised. They're stretched so thin right now.
But where are your...
Rob shook his head sharply, a shadow passing over his face. I couldn't get them out. Kate's whole body seemed to slump.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's fine. Looks like you had more success than I did. Is she all right? Both of them turned to look at me.
Rob, this is Ruby, she said. Ruby, this is my... This is Rob.
Such a boring introduction, Rob clucked his tongue. They've been hiding the pretty ones at Thurmond, I see. He held out his hand to me, a large palm, five fingers, hairy knuckles, normal. By the way I stared, you would have thought his skin was covered in scales. My hand stayed pressed flat against my thigh. I took a step closer to Kate. There wasn't a gun in his hand, or a knife, or a white noise machine, but I could see cuts and bruises, some fresh, crisscrossing the back of his hand all the way to his wrist, where the angry red lines disappeared beneath the sleeves of his white shirt. It was only when he pulled his hand back that I noticed a spray of small red spots on his right shirt cuff. Rob's face tightened when he saw where I was looking. That same hand disappeared behind Kate's back, tightening around her waist.
Total heartbreaker, right?
Kate glanced up at him.
She'll be perfect for inside jobs. Who could say no to that face? An orange.
Rob let out an appreciative whistle.
Damn.
People who valued oranges. Imagine that.
Is Sarah all right?
I pressed. Rob only looked confused.
She means Nora Jenkins, Kate said. The name Sarah was just her cover.
She's fine, Rob said, putting a hand on my shoulder. As far as I know, they're still questioning her. I'm sure our eyes in Thurmond will update us if anything changes.
My hands suddenly felt numb.
Is Kate your name? She laughed.
Yes, but my last name is Connor, not Begbie.
I nodded, only because I didn't know what else to do or say.
Didn't you say there were two of them?
Rob was staring over my shoulder. On cue, I heard a door open and slam shut behind me.
There he is, Kate said, clucking like a proud mother hen. Martin, get over here. I want you to meet your new comrade. He'll be driving with us to Georgia.
Martin strode up and took the man's hand before Rob had the chance to offer it.
Now, Kate said, clapping her hands together. We don't have much time, but we need you to wash up and change into something a little less conspicuous.
The SUV let out a steady chime as Rob opened one of its rear doors. As he turned, a few scattered rays of sunlight caught the metal handle of the gun tucked into the waistband of his jeans. I took a step back as he reached for something inside the car that I couldn't see. It was stupid of me not to have expected one or both of them to be packing some kind of heat, but my stomach tightened all the same. I turned away, looking at the splotches of old oil tattooed on the pavement, and waited for the car door to slam shut again.
Here you go,
Rob said, passing us each a black backpack. My fellow freak snatched his, checking its contents like it was a party favor bag.
It looks like the bathrooms in the station still have some running water. I wouldn't try drinking it, though, Rob continued. There's a change of clothes and some necessities in there. Don't take a million years, but feel free to wash that camp off you.
Wash Thurmond off me? Rub it off like a splatter of mud? I may have been able to erase everyone else's memories, but I couldn't scrub away my own. I took my bag without a word, the beginnings of a headache rumbling at the base of my skull. I knew what that meant well enough to take a step back. My heel caught on the uneven cement, sending me stumbling toward the hard ground. I threw out my arms in a lame attempt to reclaim my balance, but the only solid thing I found was Rob's arm. He may have thought he was being chivalrous by catching me, but he should have let me fall. My brain released a blissful little sigh as it went tumbling into Rob's thoughts. All at once, the pressure that had been building in the back of my mind released, sending a tingle racing down my spine. I gritted my teeth at the sinking sensation, anger flooding my system as I tried to yank myself away. Unlike Kate's memories, which came and went like fluttering eyelashes. Rob's thoughts seemed almost lethargic, velvety and murky. They didn't piece themselves together so much as seep into one another, like ink dropped into a glass of water, the dark mass stretching and slithering until it finally polluted everything that had once been clean. I was Rob, and Rob was staring down at two dark shapes. Two dark sacks covered their heads, but it was obvious that one was a man and the other a woman. It was the latter that had my heart thrumming in my ears. The strength of her sobbing shook her entire body, but she never stopped struggling against the plastic ties binding her hands and feet. Rain came down around us like an afterthought, running down through the gutters of the nearby buildings. Through the filter of Rob's mind, it sounded like static. Two enormous black dumpsters came into focus out of the corner of my eye, and it was only then that I realized we were in an alley, and we were alone. Rob's hand, my hand, reached out and ripped the hood off the woman, sending her dark hair flying over her face. But it wasn't a woman at all. It was a girl, no older than I was, wearing a set of dark green clothes. A uniform. A camp uniform. Tears mixed with rain dripping down over her cheeks into her mouth. Her colorless lips formed the shape, "Please," and her eyes seemed to scream, "No." But there was a gun in my hand, silver and shining despite the low light. The same gun that was tucked in the back of Rob's jeans. The same one that was now pointed at the girl's forehead. The gun jumped in my hand as it went off, but in that instant, the flash lit up her terrified face, an unfinished scream drowned out by the bang. A spray of blood flicked up over my hand as her face seemed to cave in on itself, staining the dark jacket I wore, and the edge of the white cuff beneath it. The boy died the same way, only Rob didn't bother to even take his hood off before he ended his life. The bodies were lifted into the dumpsters. I shrank back and away from the scene, watching it grow smaller and smaller and smaller until the dark, cloudy haze of Rob's mind swallowed it whole. I tugged myself free, coming up from the inky pool with a sharp gasp. Rob released my arm instantly, but Kate dove forward and would have taken his place if I hadn't raised both hands to stop her. "Are you all right?" she asked. "You've gone pale."
"I'm okay,"
I said, trying to keep my voice calm and steady.
"Still feeling a little woozy from the medicine."
Martin let out an annoyed sigh behind me. He was hopping from foot to foot, grumbling impatiently. He slid a suspicious eye in my direction, and for half a heartbeat, I was afraid he knew exactly what had just happened. But no, connections like that were fast and lasted only a few seconds, no matter how long it felt to me. I kept my eyes on the ground, carefully avoiding both the adults' faces. I couldn't bring myself to look at Rob, not after seeing what he had done. And I knew if I looked at Kate, I'd give myself away in an instant. She'd ask me what was wrong, and I wouldn't be able to lie, not convincingly. I'd have to tell her that her boyfriend or partner or whatever he was had left the brains of two kids splattered all over an alleyway. Rob tried to offer me a plastic water bottle from the front seat, his mouth stretched in a thin line. My eyes settled again on the tiny red flecks staining his cuff. "He killed them." The words echoed through my head. It could have happened days, maybe even weeks ago, but it didn't seem likely. Wouldn't he have changed his shirt or tried to clean it off? And then he came here. To kill us, too? Rob smiled at me, all of his teeth showing. Smiled. Like he hadn't just snuffed out two lives at point-blank range and watched the rain carry their blood into the gutters. My hands were shaking so hard now that I had to fist them around the backpack to keep him from noticing. I thought I had escaped the monsters, that I'd left them locked up behind an electric fence. But the shadows were alive, and they had chased me here. I'm next. I swallowed the scream working its way up my throat and smiled right back at him, my insides twisting. Because I had no doubt, not one single wisp of uncertainty, that if he knew what I had just seen, Kate would spend the next few days bleaching my blood out of his shirt, too. She knows, I thought, following Martin into the gas station. Kate, who smelled like rosemary, who carried me down the hallway, who saved my life. She must know. And she kissed him anyway. The inside of the gas station looked like it had been ravaged by wild animals, and there was a fairly good chance that it had been. Muddy paw tracks in all shapes and sizes created dizzying patterns on the floor, cutting over sticky patches of red and brown to the shelves of food. The store smelled like sour milk, though the drink cases were still flickering with intermittent electricity. Most of them had been cleared out of sodas and beer, but there was a surprising amount left. And no wonder. The store had marked up milk to $10 a carton. The same went for the food. Some shelves had rows of untouched chip bags and candy bars, all priced like they were endangered precious goods. Others had been picked clean or were exploding with popcorn and pretzels after their bags had been gutted. I had a plan before I even realized it. While Martin entertained himself by fiddling with the soda dispenser, I grabbed a few bags of chips and chocolate bars. A flash of guilt cut through me as I stuffed them in my bag. But really, who was I even stealing from? Who was going to call the cops on me?
"There's only one bathroom,"
Martin announced. "I'm using it first. Maybe if you're lucky, I'll leave some water for you. Maybe if I'm lucky, you'll drown yourself in it." He slammed the door shut behind him, and any guilt I might have felt about leaving him behind disappeared. Maybe it was cruel of me. Maybe I would spend the rest of my life feeling guilty about abandoning him without so much as a warning. But there was no way I could tell him what I was about to do without alerting Kate and Rob. I didn't trust him enough to believe he wouldn't shout for them, or try to hold me there. I wasted no time in stepping out of what had been Nora's, scrubs, leaving them in a heap on the floor. The uniform I was wearing under them was a dead giveaway to what I was, but the scrubs were too baggy to run in. I needed to get away fast. Martin must have turned the faucet up all the way because I could hear the water sputtering as I stepped around some of the broken glass from the store's big windows. I came around a shelf just in time to see Rob break away from kissing Kate. He patted around his jacket pockets, and out came a cell phone. Whoever it was, he wasn't all that happy to be talking to them. After a minute, he threw the phone at Kate and moved to the driver's side of the car. She turned her back to me, spreading out what looked to be a map over the hood of the SUV. When Rob appeared again, he had a long black object tucked under one arm, and he was holding another by its barrel. Kate took the rifle from him without so much as even glancing at it, and pulled its strap over her shoulder, like it belonged there. I recognized them. Of course I did. Every PSF officer that walked the perimeter of the electric fence carried an M16 rifle, and I was sure every camp controller that watched us from high up on the tower had one within reach, too. Is that what they're going to use on us? I wondered. Or are they expecting me to use one, too? The rational part of my brain finally kicked in, stomping down the chaos of panic and terror that had overtaken me. Maybe there was a reason Rob had killed those kids. Maybe they had tried to hurt him even though they were tied up. Or maybe they had just refused to join up with the League. The realization rose inside my chest like fire, burning everything in its path. Just the thought, the image of having to touch one of those guns, of being expected to fire one of them. Is that what it would take to be part of their family? Or would I have to be like Martin and become the weapon myself? My dad had served as a cop for over 7 years before he had to shoot someone. He never told me the whole story. I had to hear it secondhand from the kids in my class who had read about it in the paper. A hostage situation, I guess. It wrecked him. Dad wouldn't come out of my parents' bedroom until Grams drove out from Virginia Beach to pick me up. When I came back home a few weeks later, he acted like nothing had happened at all. I don't know what would force me to pick up a weapon like that, but it wasn't a group of strangers. I had to get out. Get away. To where didn't matter in that moment. I was a lot of things, terrible things, but I didn't want to add murderer to that list.
There was a sound like crunching glass, just loud enough to hear over the bathroom's running water and the buzz of the drink coolers. The water shut off, and it was only then that I heard the rustling again. I whirled around just in time to see the door with the employees-only sign swing open and shut behind the low food shelves. A way out. I glanced back out the window one last time, making sure Kate and Rob still had their backs to me, before bolting past the display of beef jerky and heading straight for that door. It's just a raccoon, I thought. Or rats. Not for the first time in my short life, rats were a preferable option to humans. But the crinkling came again, louder, and when I pushed the door open, I wasn't staring at a group of rats ravaging a bag of snack food. It was another kid. 8. She opened her mouth, her lips parting in a silent gasp. At first blink, I hadn't been able to tell, but she was definitely a girl, and a little one at that. 8, maybe 9 at most, judging by her size. Just a baby, drowning in an oversized Indy 500 shirt, complete with checkered flags and a bright green race car. Even weirder, her hands and arms up to her elbows were covered by bright yellow rubber gloves, the kind my mom used to wear when she scrubbed the bathroom or did the dishes. The Asian girl's dark hair was shaved down into a buzz cut, and she was wearing baggy boys' jeans. But her face was so pretty, she might have been a doll. Her full, heart-shaped lips formed a perfect O of shock, and her skin paled in such a drastic way that the freckles on her nose and cheeks stood out all the more. "Where did you come from?" I managed to choke out. The stunned look on her face flashed into one of terror. The hand she didn't have jammed down into a container of Twizzlers slammed the door shut with a streak of yellow. "Hey!" I pushed it back open in time to see her dash out the door at the other end of the stockroom, heading out into the rain. I was right behind her, throwing the backpack over my shoulders as I ran past the shelves. The door had caught on a large rock and went flying open as I kicked it and sprinted through. "Hey!" Snack-sized bags of pretzels and chips were spilling out from her pockets and beneath her shirt. She had every right to be terrified of the half-crazed girl chasing after her. I could waste time feeling bad about it later, but for now, my mind had gotten a whiff of hope, and it wasn't about to let it escape through a parking lot. She had to have come from somewhere. And if she had a way out of this town, or a place to hide until Kate and the others gave up on me, I wanted to know about it. The gas station's back lot was only 4 parking spaces wide, and one of them was taken up by an overturned dumpster. I heard animals tittering inside it as I sprinted after her, keeping my eyes on the back of her gray t-shirt. Her legs were pumping so fast beneath her that she tripped where the lot's loose asphalt met a patch of wild grass. My arms flew out to catch her, but the girl recovered just in time. I was within 2 steps of being able to grab the back of her shirt when she suddenly picked up her speed, zipping through a small cluster of trees that separated the station from what looked like another road. "I just want to talk to you," I called. "Please!" What I should have said was, "I won't hurt you," or "I'm not a PSF," or something that would have clued her into the fact that I was just as screwed in the safety department as she was. But my chest was on fire, and my lungs constricted, stretched tight and useless by the pain in my ribs. The panic button was jumping up into the air, bouncing against my chin and shoulders. I ripped it off so hard, the chain's clasp snapped. The little girl leaped over a fallen tree trunk, her sneakers squelching through the forest muck. Mine weren't much quieter, but Martin's voice drowned us both out.
"Ruby!"
My blood ran so cold, it seemed to cease pumping through me altogether. I should never have turned back to look over my shoulder, but I did, more out of instinct than fear. I didn't realize that my feet had stopped moving until Martin's round shape appeared on the other side of the trees. He was close enough for me to see the red flush that had overtaken his face, but he hadn't seen me. Not yet.
"Ruby!"
I had expected to find nothing but trees and air waiting for me as I picked up my run, but there she was, a short distance away. The girl had tucked herself behind a tree, not hiding, but also not beckoning me forward.
Her mouth was pulled into a tight line, eyes darting back and forth between me and the direction of Martin's voice. When I started toward her, she took off so fast that both feet jumped up from the ground, scared off like a little rabbit.
"Come on," I gasped, pumping my arms at my side. "I just want to..."
We broke through the trees, pouring out onto a deserted stretch of road. On the other side of the dead-end street was a line of little ramshackle houses, their windows boarded up like black eyes. I thought for sure that she was heading toward the closest one, the house with the gray fence and green door, but she made a hard right and ran for the minivan parked on the side of the road. The car was dented beyond repair, not just on the bumpers, but on the side doors and the roof. And that was to say nothing of the shot-out and cracked lights and the black paint that was flaking off in clumps. The nicest thing about it was the cursive, swirling logo that someone had painted along the sliding door. Betty Jean Cleaning. But it was a car. A way out. I wasn't thinking about the logistics at that point, about whether it had gas or if its engine would even start. I think my heart grew a pair of big, fluffy, white wings at the mere sight of it, and nothing was going to shoot it down. The girl was running so hard, she slammed into the side paneling of the minivan and bounced off it. She landed hard on the ground, but recovered faster than I ever would have. With both yellow-gloved hands on the door handle, she ripped the sliding door back with a sound loud enough to shake the birds from the nearby roofs. I got there just in time for her to close the door and slam her hand down on the lock. I could see my reflection in the tinted glass, see how she must have seen me, eyes that were wide and wild, a tangled mass of dark hair, clothes that would have otherwise been too small if camp hadn't made me so damn skinny I could see bones in my chest I didn't know existed. I ran around to the other side of the car, putting the minivan between me and anyone who'd come charging out of the trees.
"Please!"
My voice was hoarse. Martin's bellowing voice was either echoing around in my mind or it was actually getting closer. The window's tint was light enough that I could look through them and skim the trees for any flash of his waxy skin. If he was getting closer, then Kate and Rob wouldn't be far behind. They must have heard him yelling by now.
"Two choices, Ruby," I thought. "Go back or run."
My head and heart were in agreement on run. But the rest of my body, the parts that had been tormented by white noise, poisoned and mistreated by people who claimed they only had the best intentions, stubbornly held its ground. I sagged against the minivan, deflated. It was like someone had crushed my chest in a vise, spinning the handle until every ounce of air and courage had been squeezed out of me. Years at Thurmond had taught me to stop believing I could ever get away from the life people were so eager to set for me. I don't know why I thought it would be any different on the outside. I heard footsteps crashing through the trees and undergrowth, louder with each second. When I looked up again, Kate's startlingly blonde hair was weaving in and out of the trees, glowing under the drizzly clouds like a firefly.
"Ruby!"
I heard her call.
"Ruby, where are you?"
And then there was Rob, walking right behind her with the gun in his hands. I looked right to the houses on the street's dead end. Farther down the opposite end of the street, I saw signs with symbols I didn't recognize. But that, the unknown, that had to be better than going back to Kate. The little girl inside of the car looked at me, then turned to look at the trees, her lips pressed together, pulling down into a frown. One hand was clenched on the door handle, the other on her seat's armrest. She started to stand once, only to sit back down and look one more time in my direction. I swiped at my face with the back of my hand and took a step back. Hopefully, the girl knew well enough to hide herself when Kate and Rob ran after me. I'd lead them as far away as I could. It was the least I could do after scaring a few years off her life. I hadn't even fully turned to go when I heard the door roll open behind me. A pair of hands reached out and seized the back of my uniform shirt, twisting the fabric for a better grip. When she yanked, I fell back, hitting the closest seat. My neck snapped against the armrest, and I rolled onto the rough carpet behind the front passenger seat. The door roared shut behind me. I blinked, trying to clear the dark spots swimming in my vision,
but the other girl wasn't about to wait for me to get settled. She climbed over my tangled legs to get to the rear seat, grabbing my shirt collar and giving it a hard tug.
"Okay, okay,"
I said, crawling toward her. My fingers slid against the minivan's gray carpets. With the exception of a few stacked newspapers and tied-off plastic grocery bags tucked under the rear seat, the inside of the minivan was pretty well kept. She motioned for me to crouch down behind one of the middle seats. As I pressed my knees against my chest, I realized that despite the fact that I had followed her order to the letter, she still hadn't spoken a single word to me.
"What's your name?"
I asked. She draped herself over the top of the rear seat, her feet kicking at the air as she dug around for something in the back. If she heard me, she pretended not to.
"It's all right. You can talk to me."
Her face was flushed when she reemerged, a paint-splattered white sheet in hand. She pressed a finger to her lips, and I wisely shut my mouth. The girl shook out the folded fabric and threw it over my head. The smell of fake lemon cleaner and bleach assaulted my nostrils as the sheet settled around me. I opened my mouth to protest, reaching up to yank it away from my face, but something stopped me. Someone was coming. No, more than one person. I caught snippets of their back and forth, heard their feet slap against the pavement. The sound of a door opening stopped my heart dead in my chest.
"I swear to God, it was her, Liam."
The voice was deep, but it didn't sound like an adult.
"And look, I told you she'd beat us back. Suzume, did you run into trouble?"
The other car door opened. Someone else. Liam let out a relieved sigh.
"Thank God," he said with a hint of a southern drawl. "Come on, come on, come on, get in. I don't know what's going on, but I don't want to stay long enough to find out. The skip tracers were bad enough." "Why won't you admit that it was her?"
the other voice snapped.
"Because we ditched her in Ohio, that's why."
Above the sound of Liam's voice and the blood pounding between my ears, I heard another voice.
"Ruby? Ruby!"
"Kate." I pressed both hands against my mouth and squeezed my eyes shut.
"What in the world?"
the first voice said.
"Is that what I think it is?"
The first gunshot popped like a firecracker. It might have been the distance or the army of trees and undergrowth muffling it, but it seemed harmless. A warning. The next one had much sharper teeth.
"Stop!"
I heard Kate scream.
"Don't shoot!"
"Lee? I know, I know."
The engine sputtered to life and the squeal of the tires wasn't far behind. "Zoo, seatbelt." I tried to brace myself, but the car tossed me back and forth between the seats. At one point, my head cracked back against the plastic side paneling and drink holder, but no one was paying attention to the strange noises in the back seat when someone was firing a gun. I wondered if Rob had given the other rifle to Martin.
"Zoo, did something happen in the gas station?"
the voice identified as Liam pressed. There was an edge of urgency to his words, but not panic. We had been driving for over 10 minutes and were well away from the guns. His other companion, however, was a completely different story.
"Oh my God, more skip tracers? What, were they having a freaking convention? You realize what would have happened if we'd been caught, don't you?"
he railed.
"And they were shooting at us. Shooting with a gun."
Somewhere to the right of me, the little girl giggled.
"Well, I'm glad you find it funny," the other one said. "Do you know what happens when you get shot, Suzume? The bullet rips through, Chubbs."
The other boy's voice was sharp enough to cut off whatever gory tale he was about to share.
"Settle down, okay? We're fine. That was a little bit closer than I would have liked. But still, we'll just have to try to make better mistakes tomorrow. Right, Zoo?"
The first voice let out a strangled groan.
"I'm sorry about before,"
Liam said. His voice was gentle, which was enough for me to put together he was talking to the girl, not the guy who had moved on to moaning in dismay.
"Next time, I'll go with you to get food. You're not hurt, right?"
The vibrations from the road dulled their voices. A loose penny was clattering around so loudly in the drink holder that I almost reached up from under the sheet to grab it.
When the first boy spoke again, I had to strain my ears to hear him.
Did it sound like they were looking for someone to you?
No.
It sounded like they were shooting at us.
Feeling left my hands, draining from the tips of my fingers. You're safe, I told myself. They're kids, too. Kids who had unwittingly put themselves in the line of fire for me. I should have known this would happen. This, not my fear of setting off alone into a deserted town, should have been my first concern. But I had panicked, and it was like my brain had melted into a simmering pool of terror.
A number of things, Liam was saying, but let's try to focus on finding East River.
I needed to get out. Now. Right now. This had been a terrible idea, maybe even my worst. If I left now, they still had a chance of escaping Kate and Rob. I would still have a chance of escaping them, too. I looped the straps of the backpack over my shoulders again and kicked the sheet off. Taking in a deep drag of the musty, cool air conditioning, I used the rear seat to prop myself up. Two teenage boys were in the front seat, facing the road. It was raining harder now. The fat drops were falling too fast for the windshield wipers to keep up with them, making it look as though we were headed straight into an impressionist's vision of West Virginia. Silver skies were above, and a black road was below, and somewhere in between, the luminescent glow of the trees with their new spring coats. Liam, our driver, was wearing a beat-up leather jacket, darker across the shoulders where the rain had soaked through. His hair was a light, ashy blonde that stood on end when he ran a hand through it. Every now and then he would glance to the dark-skinned teen in the passenger seat, but it wasn't until he cast a quick look into the rearview mirror that I saw his eyes were blue.
"I can't see out of the back window when you—"
His words choked off as he did a double take. The minivan lurched to the right as he spun around in his seat and turned the wheel with him. The other kid let out a strangled noise as the car jerked to the right, toward the side of the road. The girl glanced back over her shoulder at me, her expression somewhere between surprise and exasperation. Liam slammed on the brakes. Both of the car's other passengers gasped as their seatbelts locked over their chests, but I had nothing holding me back from flying between the two middle seats. After what felt like a short eternity, but was likely only a hot second, the tires let off a long squeal of pain before the minivan quivered to a dead stop. Both boys were staring back at me, wearing two completely different expressions. Liam's tanned face had gone porcelain pale, his mouth hanging open in an almost comical way. The other boy only glared at me through his thin, silver-framed glasses, his lips pursed in disapproval, the same way my mom's used to when she found out I had stayed up past my bedtime. His ears, which were a touch too big for his head, stuck out from his skull. Everything between them, from the wide expanse of his forehead down past the thin bridge of his nose to his full lips, seemed to darken in anger. For a split second, I was afraid that he was a red, because, judging by the look in his eyes, he wanted nothing more than to burn me to a crisp. Boys. Why did it have to be boys? I peeled myself up off the carpets and bolted toward the side door. My fingers squeezed the door handle, but no matter how hard I pulled it, it didn't budge.
"Zoo?"
Liam cried, looking back and forth between us. She merely folded her hands in her lap, rubber gloves squeaking, and blinked at him innocently, like she had no idea how they had come across the stowaway currently sprawled out by her feet.
"We all agreed. No strays."
The other boy shook his head.
"That's why we didn't take the kittens."
"Oh, for the love of—" Liam slumped down in his seat, pressing his face into his hands. "What were we going to do with a box of abandoned kittens?"
"Maybe if that black heart of yours hadn't been willing to leave them to starve, we could have found them new, loving homes."
Liam gave the other boy a look of pure amazement.
"You're never going to get over those cats, are you? They were innocent, defenseless kittens, and you left them outside someone's mailbox." "A mailbox?"
"Chubbs," Liam groaned. "Come on."
"Chubbs? That had to have been a joke. The kid was as skinny as a stick.
Everything about him, from his nose to his fingers, was long and narrow. He leveled Liam with a withering stare. I don't know what amazed me more, the fact that they were arguing about kittens, or that they'd managed to forget that I was in the car.
"Excuse me," I interrupted, slamming my palm against the window. "Can you please unlock the door?"
That shut them up, at least. When Liam finally turned back toward me, his expression was entirely different than before. He looked serious, but not altogether unhappy or suspicious, which is a lot more than I could have said for myself if our situations had been reversed.
"Are you the one they were looking for?" he asked.
"Ruth?"
"Ruby,"
Chubbs corrected. Liam waved his hand.
"Right. Ruby.
Just unlock the door, please." I yanked at the handle again. "I made a mistake. This was a mistake. I was selfish. I know that, so you have to let me go before they catch up."
"Before who catches up?"
"Skip tracers?" Liam asked. His eyes darted over me, from my haggard face down my forest green uniform to my mud-stained shoes, to the psi number that had been written on their canvas toes in permanent marker. A look of horror flickered over his face.
"Did you just come from a camp?"
I felt Zoo's dark eyes on me, but I held Liam's gaze and nodded. "The Children's League broke me out."
"And you ran away from them?"
Liam pressed. He looked back at Zoo for confirmation. She nodded.
"What does that have to do with anything?"
Chubbs interrupted.
"You heard her. Unlock the stupid door. We already have PSFs and skip tracers after us. We don't need to add the league to the list. They probably think we took her. And if they put in the call that there are freaks roaming around in a beat-up black minivan..."
He couldn't bring himself to finish.
"Hey," Liam said, holding up a finger. "Don't talk about Black Betty that way." "Oh, excuse me for hurting the feelings of a 20-year-old minivan."
"He's right," I said. "I'm sorry, please. I don't want any more trouble for you."
"You want to go back to them?"
Liam was facing me again, his mouth set in a grim line.
"Listen, it's none of my business, Green, but you have the right to know that whatever lies they fed you probably aren't true. They aren't our angel network. They have their own agenda, and if they plucked you out of camp, it means they have a plan for you."
I shook my head. "You don't think I know that?"
"Okay," he returned in a calm voice. "Then why are you in such a hurry to get back?"
There was nothing judgmental or accusatory about the question, so why did I still feel like an idiot? Something hot and itchy bubbled up in my throat, drifting up until it settled behind my eyes. Oh, God. The kid was looking at me with all the sympathy and pity required of someone watching a stray puppy being put down. I didn't know if the emotion welling inside me was anger or embarrassment, but I didn't have time to sort it out.
"No, but I can't... I didn't mean to drag you into... I mean, I did mean to, but..."
I saw Zoo move out of the corner of my eye, reaching for me. I jerked away, sucking in a harsh breath. A hurt expression crossed her face, staying long enough for me to feel guilty about it. She had been trying to help me, to be kind to me. She didn't know what kind of monster she had saved. If she had, she would never have unlocked the door.
"Do you want to go back to them?"
Chubbs was looking at Liam, and Liam was looking at me. He had caught me again with his eyes, and I hadn't even realized it.
"No,"
I said, and it was the truth.
"I don't."
He didn't say anything, only shifted the minivan out of park. The van rolled forward.
"What are you doing, Ruby?"
I willed my hand to reach for the door, but it seemed too far and my hand too heavy.
"Get out. Get out now."
"Lee, don't you dare,"
Chubbs began.
"If the League comes after us..."
"It'll be okay," Liam said. "We're just taking her to the nearest bus station."
I blinked. That was more than even I was expecting. You don't have to.
Liam waved me off. It's fine. Sorry, we can't do more. Can't risk it.
Yes, you're right, Chubb said. So, explain to me why we aren't taking her to one of the train stations, which are closer.
When I looked back up, Liam was studying me, his light eyebrows pulled tight together by some unspoken thought. I tried not to squirm under his gaze.
Remind me again. Ruby, right? I'm sure you've caught on by now, but I'm Liam. The lovely lady behind me is Suzume.
She smiled shyly. I turned and raised a brow in the direction of the other boy.
I'm guessing your name isn't actually Chubbs.
No,
he sniffed.
Liam gave me that name at camp.
He was a bit of a porker.
Liam had a small smile on his face. Turns out field labor and a restricted diet are better than fat camp. Zoo can back me up on this one. But Zoo wasn't paying attention, not to any of us. She had pulled her hoodie up over her ears and twisted around in her seat so that she was staring over the top of it, out the back window. Her lips were parted, but she couldn't bring the words to them. The color drained from her round face.
Zoo? Liam asked. What's wrong?
She didn't need to point. Even if we hadn't seen the tan SUV speeding straight for us, it would have been impossible to miss the bullet that blew through the back window and shattered it. 9. The single bullet cut a path straight down the center of the minivan, exiting out through the windshield. For a moment, none of us did anything but stare at the hole and the spreading spiderweb of cracks radiating out from it.
Holy sh—
Liam threw the car into forward, slamming his foot down all the way on the gas. He seemed to have forgotten that we were in a Dodge Caravan and not a BMW, because it went from 0 to 60 in what felt like 30 minutes. Black Betty's body began to shake, rattling from more than just the holes and cracks in the road. I whirled around, searching for Rob's SUV, but the car behind us was a bright red pickup truck, and the man leaning out of the passenger window of the truck, rifle in hand, was not Rob.
I told you, Chubbs yelled. I told you they were skip tracers. Yes, you were right, Liam yelled right back, but could you try to be useful too?
He jerked the car left just as the man fired off another shot. It must have gone wide because it never hit the car, not that I could tell. He fired again, and that bullet had far better luck. It slammed into Black Betty's bumper. We felt the hit like a brick to the back. Every single one of us let out a sharp gasp. In Chubb's case, he moaned and crossed himself. Zoo was slouched down in her seat, her chest pressed against her knees. Her hood hid her face, but it couldn't mask the way her entire body shook. I put a hand on her back, holding her down. Another bang sounded behind us, but this time it wasn't a gunshot.
What in the—
Liam risked a look back over his shoulder.
Are you kidding me?
My heart fell like a stone into my stomach. The red truck jolted forward, and I saw the driver, a dark-haired woman with glasses, tug the wheel to the side, trying to shake the truck free from the tan SUV that had rammed into it. I didn't need to see who was driving it to know who that vehicle belonged to. Kate and Rob. But then, who was in the pickup truck?
It is her, Chubbs cried. I told you. She found us.
Then who's the guy with the gun? Liam cried. Her boyfriend? The man who had fired at us turned his attention to taking out the SUV behind him, twisting around in the window. He lasted half a breath. A gunshot from the SUV clipped him in the chest and sent an explosive spray of blood into the air. The crack of the next bullet sent the shooter's lifeless body sliding out of the passenger window of the truck. The driver, the woman, didn't so much as look back at him. I watched the red truck finally break away from the SUV's front bumper. With both of its back tires blown out, it swerved into the other lane, spinning out, until it came to a jolting stop on the shoulder of the highway.
That's one, I heard Liam say.
I turned back, fully expecting to see Rob's gun trained on me through the blown-out back windshield of our van. Only Rob was behind the wheel. Kate was the one in the passenger seat, a rifle steady between her hands.
Please, just let me go, I said, grabbing Liam's shoulder. I'll go back with them. No one has to get hurt.
Yes, Chubb said. Pull over. Let her out. Both of you, shut up,
Liam said, throwing Black Betty into the right lane and then back into the left. The SUV followed us, more than keeping up. I couldn't tell if we had slowed down or if they had somehow gunned it harder, because in the next breath, the SUV rammed into us, and not even the seatbelts could keep us from jerking forward. Liam muttered something under his breath, which was lost in the sudden onslaught of heavy rain. He rolled down his window and threw a hand outside, as if to motion for the SUV to go around us.
Do something, Chubb shouted, bracing his hands against the steering wheel.
I'm trying, he said. I can't concentrate. He's trying to use his abilities. The realization crept up through my terror. The fat droplets splattering the window blurred the trees around us, but Liam didn't bother with the wipers. If he had, he might have seen the other car blazing toward us from the opposite direction. Its horn screeched to life and woke Liam from his trance. The minivan swerved back into the right lane, narrowly missing a head-on collision with the sedan. If that little car hadn't slammed on its brakes, the SUV would have plowed right into it, too. Both Zoo and I whirled around just in time to see the SUV swerve back into the right lane. Rob managed to recover quickly, and they were speeding toward us again before we had a chance to catch our breaths. Liam, I begged, please just pull over. I won't let them do anything to you. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I don't want to... I squeezed my eyes shut.
Green?
Liam's voice cut into my thoughts. Can you drive?
No.
Can you see better than Chubbs?
Maybe, but
great, he said, reaching back for my arm. Come on up to the captain's seat. He snorted, even as another bullet pinged against Black Betty's metal skin. Come on, it's just like riding a bike. Right pedal is gas to go, left is brake, steer with the wheel. That's all you need to know.
Wait!
But apparently I didn't get a say in the matter. He swerved back into the left lane just as the SUV came up for another tap. Instead of speeding up, his foot came down hard on the brake. Black Betty skidded to a halt, and the SUV blew right by us. It happened too fast for me to put up any kind of fight. He unsnapped his seatbelt and pulled me toward the driver's seat just as he stood from it. The car rolled forward on its own accord, and I panicked, slamming my foot down on what I thought was the brake pedal. Black Betty leaped forward, and this time I was the one that screamed.
Brake is on the left!
Liam flew against the dashboard as the SUV recovered. I heard its tires scream as Rob turned the truck around and kicked up the speed.
Hit the gas!
Why can't he drive? I asked in a strangled voice. Chubbs pushed the passenger's seat back far enough for him to climb over it into the back, and Liam took Chubbs' seat.
Because, he said, rolling down the window, he can barely see 5 feet in front of him. Trust me, you don't want him to drive, darling. Now, hit the gas.
I did as I was told. The car sprung forward again, sending my heart up into my throat. The wheels spun against the wet asphalt. Liam was half hanging out of the window, half sitting on it.
Faster, he said.
The rain fell thick and heavy, but the SUV's headlights pierced the mist as I drove the van straight toward them. We were going so fast that the steering wheel shook in my hands, jerking around like it had a life of its own. I bit back a frustrated scream and tried to let up on the gas, but Liam wasn't having it.
No, keep going.
Lee.
Chubbs was hunched over in his seat.
This is insane. What are you doing?
He had been so quiet that I'd almost forgotten he was in the van. With the speedometer creeping past 80, 90, 95, I wasn't remembering much at all. And that's when it went to hell. There was a horrible bang, 1,000 times worse than the sound of a balloon exploding, and the van was spinning, the wheel dancing right out of my hands.
Straight!
Liam was shouting.
Straighten out!
Shit!
The wind was knocked out of my chest by my seatbelt, but I fought against the natural turn of the wheel long enough to get us heading straight again. The car tilted back, leaving a trail of sparks on the road behind us. We were staring the SUV down again, making a second head-on pass at them.
Keep going toward them. Don't stop!
Liam yelled. But the tire, I thought, my hands strangling the steering wheel. The tire. Chubbs had reached for Liam's legs, steadying him before he could go flying out of the window.
Let go, he snapped. I'm fine. I've got it now.
I didn't know what Liam had meant by it. Not until I looked up into the rearview mirror and saw the dark body of a tree come hurtling out of the woods, guided in front of the SUV by nothing other than a flick of Liam's hand. With his attention focused on the minivan barreling toward them, Rob didn't have time to jerk the car out of the tree's path. I spun my hands around the wheel blindly until we were facing away from the wreckage. I heard the sound of shattering glass and crunching metal as Rob tried to veer, only to overcorrect. When I looked back in the side mirror, the SUV was on its side in a smoking heap. Beside it was the splintered body of a tree, still rolling to a stop after the collision.
What did you do?
I had to yell over the chatter of the wind and road.
I thought...
Chubbs was the one to answer, his face ashen.
Now, do you get it? They weren't going to stop.
Liam slid back inside of the window, plopping down with a long sigh. His hair was standing up on all ends, dusted with leaves and little twigs.
Okay, Green, he said, keeping his voice steady.
They blew the back tire out, so you're driving on the rim. Just keep heading straight and then start to slow down. Get off on the next ramp.
I clenched my jaw so hard that it ached.
You all right, Zoo?
He asked. The girl gave him two thumbs up, her yellow gloves the only bright spot of color in the van.
Well, I'm fine. Thanks for asking, Chubbs said.
His little glasses were crooked on his face as he smoothed his blue button-down shirt. For good measure, he leaned forward and smacked the back of Liam's head.
And by the way, are you out of your freaking mind? Do you know what happens when a body is thrown from a car at high velocity?
No,
Liam interrupted, but I imagine it's not pretty or appropriate for an 11-year-old's ears. I glanced back at Zoo.
11? That couldn't be right.
Oh, so you can throw her in the path of bullets, but she can't hear a scary story.
Chubbs crossed his arms over his chest. Liam reached down and pulled his seat back upright. When he sat back, it was with a grimace and clenched fists. There was a fresh cut above his eye. Blood dripped from his chin. I saw the green highway sign through the haze of rain. It didn't matter what town or exit number it said. I just wanted to get off the road and out of the driver's seat. My entire body was numb, exhausted, as I took my foot off the gas. The minivan followed the curve of the ramp with only the slightest nudging, and by the time we reached the road, it came to a natural stop. I pressed a hand to my chest to make sure my heart hadn't given out on me. Liam reached over and put the parking brake on.
You did a good job, he began.
His voice was quieter than I expected. Unfortunately, it did nothing to calm the pissed-off snake that was coiled tight around my stomach. I reached over and punched him in the arm, hard.
Ow!
He cried, pulling away from me with wide eyes.
What was that for? That was not like riding a bike, you asshole.
He stared at me a moment, his lips twitching. It was Suzume who burst out into a fit of silent laughter, an endless stream of gasping and shaking that turned her face bright pink and left her breathless. Seconds passed with her laughter as the only sound able to float above the rain, at least until Chubbs put his face in his hands and let out a long groan.
Oh, yeah, Liam said, popping his door open. You're gonna fit in real nice.
The rain had slowed to a drizzle by the time Liam got to work on the back tire. I had stayed exactly where I was in the driver's seat, mostly because I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be doing. The other two kids had jumped out of the car after him, Suzume heading to the back of the van with Liam, and Chubbs in the exact opposite direction. I watched through the cracked windshield as he made his way toward a sign pointing us in the direction of the Monongahela National Forest. After a minute, he pulled something, a paperback book, out of his back pocket and sat down at the edge of the road. Feeling more than a little envy, I squinted, trying to make out the book's title, but half of the cover was missing and the other half covered by his hand. I don't know if he was actually reading or just glaring at the text. I had pulled us over into Slaty Fork, West Virginia, if the road signs were to be trusted. What I thought had been some Hickville back road had actually been Highway 219, in the middle of nowhere. Marlington might have lost its people, but it didn't look as though Slaty Fork had any to begin with. I stood up from the driver's seat and made my way to the back of the minivan. My hands were still trembling, as if trying to shake out that last bit of adrenaline singing in my blood. The black backpack that Rob and Kate had given me had been thrown into the back seat, covered in a few loose sheets of newspaper and an empty bottle of Windex. I brushed the backpack off and set it down next to me on the seat. The newspaper was over 3 years old and stiff with age. There was a half-page ad for a new face cream someone had oh so cleverly called Forever Young. I flipped the sheet over, looking for any actual news. I skimmed over an opinion piece that celebrated the rehabilitation camps and was more amused than offended that Psy kids were now being openly referred to as mutant time bombs. There was also a short article on rioting that the reporter claimed was the direct result of escalating tensions between the West and East government on new birth legislation. At the very bottom of the page, past some fluff story about the anniversary of some train conductor's strike, was a picture of Clancy Gray. "President's son attends Children's League hearing," is what the headline beneath it said. I didn't need to read more than the first two or three lines to get the basic gist. The president was too big of a coward to come out of hiding after a failed assassination attempt, so he sent his freak baby to do the dirty work for him. How old was Clancy now? I wondered. The pictures at Thurmond were identical to this one, and I had never thought of him as anything older than 11 or 12. But he must have been 18 or close to by now, practically an old geezer by our standards. I tossed the paper aside in disgust and reached for my backpack again. Rob had said there was a change of clothes inside, and if that was the case, I was getting out of my Thurmond uniform once and for all. A plain white shirt, a pair of jeans, a belt, and a zip-up hoodie. I could handle that. The knock on the window startled me enough that I nearly bit my tongue clean off. Liam's face appeared there, drawn in tense lines. "Can you bring those clothes to me for a sec? I need to show you something." The very second I knew his eyes were on me, every bone, muscle, and joint in my body snapped to attention. With a faint taste of blood in my mouth, I jumped out of the sliding door, taking in the sight of the van. If it were possible, the car looked worse than before, like a toy that someone had wedged down the sink and run through the garbage disposal. My fingers came up to trace one of the fresh punctures on the side paneling where a bullet had slammed through the thin metal. Liam knelt beside Zoo, who was holding on to the spare tire with everything she had, and went to work cranking the van up on the jack and off the demolished back right tire. I came to stand behind them just in time to watch Liam wave his hand in front of the hubcap. The nuts twirled out on his command, collecting in a neat pile on the ground. Blue, I registered. Liam was blue. What did that make the others? "Okay," he began. He blew a strand of his light hair out of his eyes. "Take out the shirt you were about to change into." I'm not changing out here," I said. He rolled his eyes. "Really? You're worried about your modesty when we're going to have league agents on our tail in a matter of hours? Priorities, Green. Take out the shirt." I watched him for a moment, but even I wasn't sure what I was looking for. "Feel around the collar," Liam said. He set another nut on the ground by his feet. "You'll find a bump." I did. It was small, no bigger than a pea, sewn into the otherwise nondescript shirt. "Chubbs has a fancy lady kit under the front seat," he said. "If you're going to change into it, you need to cut the tracker out of that shirt." The little fancy lady kit turned out to be a box of thread, scissors, and a tiny piece of embroidery. On a scrap of fabric, someone, Chubbs, had sewn a perfect black square. I stared at the mark, rubbing my thumb over its raised surface. "Anyway, you should probably change out of the uniform," Liam continued, "but be sure to check the pants and the sweater, too. I wouldn't put it past them to use more than one." He was right again. I found one sewn into the waistband of the jeans, one in the hem of the hoodie, and even one glued inside the belt buckle. 4 trackers for one girl, plus one that had been sewn into the lining of the backpack itself. Liam finished replacing the tire with the spare faster than I thought possible. Zoo helped him place the nuts back in their sockets and slowly crank the car back down. When he handed the tools to her, she knew exactly where to put them in the trunk. "Here," he said, holding his hand out to me. "I'll take care of them." My hands trembled as I handed the trackers to him. He threw them on the ground and crushed them beneath the heel of his shoe. "I don't understand," I began. But I did, in a way. They wouldn't have gone to all that trouble breaking me out if they hadn't had a method of keeping tabs on me if I got recaptured or separated from them. Liam's hand came out toward me, and the sheer panic at the thought of his touch had me jumping back, trying to put as much air between us as I could. It still wasn't far enough. His hand dropped between us, but I felt the warmth of his upturned palm brush my shoulder, as if it had actually rested there. My arms came up and crossed over my chest, and some mangled mess of anxiety and guilt rose up from deep in my guts. I tried to focus on the Psi identification numbers on the top of my shoes to keep from jumping away again. "You are acting like a nervy 5-year-old," I told myself. "Stop it, he's just another kid." "They tell you a lot of lies in the Children's League, the biggest being that you're free," he said. "They talk about love and respect and family, but I don't know any family that puts a tracking device on someone and then sends them out to be shot up and blown away." "But we didn't have to kill them," I said. My fingers tightened around the backpack straps. "There was another kid inside. Martin. He didn't deserve to..."
"You mean..."
Liam wiped the grease and dirt from his hands off on the front of his jeans. "The kind of..." He made a vague motion with his hands, which I think was supposed to indicate Martin's plump stature.
"That guy?"
I nodded. "The tree didn't actually hit them," Liam said, leaning against the minivan's sliding door. "They might still be alive." Liam guided me back toward the passenger seat and whistled to get Chubb's attention. Somewhere behind me, I heard Zoo climb back into Black Betty. "Look," he continued, "they all wear the trackers. I'm sure another league agent will be along in a little while to help them. You can go back if you want, or we can take you to the bus station like I said we would." My hands were still by my side, my face as blank as a clear sky. But I wasn't fooling him. He tuned into my guilt like I had been wearing it plain as day on my face. "It doesn't make you a bad person, you know, to want to live your own life." I looked back and forth between the road and his face, more confused now than ever. It didn't make sense for him to want to help me, not when he already had 2 other people counting on him, that he wanted to protect. Liam opened the back door for me, tilting his head toward the empty seat inside. But before I could even consider the cost of staying with them, if just for a short while, Chubb's arm shot out and he ripped the sliding door shut in front of my face. "Chubbs," Liam warned.
"Why?"
Chubbs began.
"Were you with the Children's League?"
"Hey now," Liam said. "This is a don't ask, don't tell operation. Green, you..."
"No," Chubb said. "You decided that. You and Suzume. If we're going to be stuck with her, I want to know who this person is and why we got chased down by gun-toting lunatics trying to get her back."
Liam lifted his hands in surrender. What could I tell them that wouldn't sound like a complete and total lie? My head felt light. I was almost too exhausted to think. Zoo gave me a nod of encouragement, her eyes bright. "I was a runner in the control tower," I blurted. "I saw the access codes to the computer servers the League wants access to. I have a photographic memory, and I'm good with numbers and codes." That was probably overkill, but apparently I had sold it.
"What about your friend? What's his deal?"
The longer they stared at me, the harder it became to not fidget. "Get a grip, Ruby,"
You mean Martin? I said, my voice sounding high to my own ears. Yesterday was the first time I had ever seen him. I don't know what his story was. I didn't ask. I wished I didn't know what Martin's story was. Chubb slapped the side of the minivan.
Don't tell me you believe that, Lee. We knew everyone by the time we broke out.
Broke out? They actually escaped? Shock left me speechless for several moments until I asked finally,
Really?
All 3,000 of them? The boys took a step back at the same time.
You had 3,000 kids at your camp? Liam asked.
Why? I looked between them, unnerved.
How many were in your camp?
300 at most, Liam said.
Are you sure? 3,000.
Well, it's not like they gave us an official number. There were 30 kids per cabin and about 100 of those. There used to be more, but they sent the reds, oranges, and yellows away. Apparently, I had blown his mind. Liam let out a strangled noise at the back of his throat.
Holy crap,
he finally managed to squeeze out.
What camp was it?
It's none of your business, I said. I'm not asking you where you were.
We were in Caledonia, Ohio, Chubb said, ignoring a sharp look from Liam. They stuck us in an abandoned elementary school. We broke out.
Your turn.
Why? So you can report me to the nearest PSF station?
Yeah, because clearly we'd be able to stroll up and lodge a sighting report. After a moment, I blew out a harsh breath.
Fine. I was in Thurmond.
The silence that followed seemed to stretch on longer than the road beneath us.
Are you serious?
Liam asked finally.
Crazy Thurmond, with the Franken kiddies?
They've stopped testing, I said, feeling strangely defensive.
No, I just...
Liam raced through the words. I thought it was all filled up, you know? That's why they bust us to Ohio.
How old were you when you went into camp?
Chubb's voice was measured, but I saw his face fall all the same.
You were young, right?
The answer popped out before I could stop myself. The day after my 10th birthday? Liam blew out a low whistle, and I wondered exactly how much of Thurman's reputation had leaked out in the time I had been there. Who were the ones talking about it? The former PSFs assigned there? And, if people knew, why hadn't anyone come to help us?
How long were you guys in Caledonia?
Suzume was there for about 2 years, I was there for a year and a half, and Lee was there for a year or so.
That's... A small, ugly voice inside my head whispered, That's it? Even as the better part of me knew full well that it didn't matter if they had been there for 1 year or 1 day, a minute in one of those camps was enough to smash you into pieces.
And you're what? 16? 17?
I don't know, I said, and the thought nearly knocked me back against the van. I really wasn't sure. Sam had claimed it was 6 years, but she could have been wrong. We didn't keep track of time at Thurmond in the usual way. I recognized seasons passing, but somewhere along the line I had stopped trying to mark it. I grew bigger. I knew every winter that I must be another year older, but none of it just hadn't seemed to matter until now.
What year is it?
Chubb snorted, rolling his eyes heavenward. He opened his mouth to say something, but stopped once he got a good look at my face. I'm not sure what kind of expression I was wearing, but it erased his exasperation in 2 seconds flat. His narrowed eyes widened into something that looked very much like pity.
And Liam? His expression seemed to dissolve entirely.
I felt the hair on my neck begin to prickle, my fingers twist the fabric of my uniform shorts. The absolute last thing, the last thing I wanted was to be pitied by a bunch of strangers.
Regret washed down through me, flooding out even my anxiety and fear. I shouldn't have said anything at all. I should have lied or dodged the question. Whatever they thought Thurman was like, whatever they believed I'd gone through, it was bad enough to mark me as pathetic in their eyes. I could see it in their faces, and the irony stung more than I expected it to. They'd taken in a monster, thinking it was a mouse.
16, then, I said once Liam had confirmed the year. Sam had been right after all. Something else was bothering me.
They're still creating new camps and sending kids to them?
Not so much anymore, Liam said. The younger set, Zoo's age, they were hit the hardest. People got scared and the birth rate dropped off even before the government tried banning new births. Most of the kids that are still being sent to camps are like us. They escaped detection during collections or tried to run. I nodded, mulling this over.
At Thurmond, Chubbs began, did they really?
I think that's enough, Liam interrupted. He reached past Chubbs' outstretched arm and opened the sliding door for me again. She answered your questions, we answered hers, and now we've got to hit the road while the going is still good.
Zoo climbed in first, and without looking at either boy, I followed, heading to the rear seat, where I could stretch out and hide from any more unwanted questions. Chubbs took the front passenger seat, throwing one last look back at me. His full lips were pressed so tight together, they were colorless. Eventually, he turned his attention to the book in his lap and pretended that I wasn't there at all. Black Betty purred as Liam hit the accelerator and my entire body vibrated with her. She was the only one willing to speak for a long time. The rain was still coming down, casting a gray light around the car. The windows had fogged, and for a minute I did nothing but watch the rain. Car headlights were flashing through the front windshield, but it was nowhere near dark. Chubbs eventually turned the radio on, filling the quiet space with a report about America's gas crisis and the drilling that was happening in Alaska as a result. If I wasn't already halfway to sleep, the droning from the humorless newscaster would have put me there.
Hey, Green, Liam called back. You have a last name?
I thought about lying, about making myself into someone that I wasn't. But it didn't seem right. Even if I let these people in, they'd forget about me soon enough.
No,
I said. I had a PSI number and the name I'd inherited from my grandmother. The rest didn't matter. Liam turned back to the road, his fingers drumming on the steering wheel.
Got it.
I dropped back down on the seat, pressing my hands against my face. Sleep came for me eventually, just as the storm clouds peeled back to reveal a pristine night sky. Without the sound of rain, I could just make out the quiet song floating from the car speakers and Liam's deep voice as he sang along.
10.
Chubbs was the one to wake me. It was a quick slap to my shoulder, like he couldn't bring himself to touch it long enough to put the effort into shaking me, but it was enough. I had been curled like a shrimp on one of the cramped seats, but at his touch, I bolted out of it, knocking my head against the window. I felt its cold touch on the back of my neck as I all but tumbled in the narrow space between the front seat and mine. For a single, foggy instant, I couldn't remember where I was, never mind how I had gotten there. Chubbs's face crossed back into my line of sight, one eyebrow arched at my tangle of limbs, and then it all came back to me, like a punch to the throat.
Damn it, damn it, damn it, I thought, trying to smooth my dark hair out of my face. I had only meant to rest my eyes for a few minutes, and who knows how long I'd been conked out. Judging by Chubb's expression, it hadn't been a short nap.
Don't you think you've slept long enough?
He huffed, crossing his arms over his chest. The van felt warmer, and I didn't realize why until I sat up and saw the dark blue fabric that had been strung up to cover the rear windshield. The reality of the situation struck me at once, with a sharp twist in my side. I'd left myself wide open in a van of strangers, so wide open, in fact, that Chubbs had been able to put a hand on me. God, I didn't know which of us had come out luckier in the end, him for not having his brain wiped clean, or me for avoiding yet another potential disaster. How stupid could I be? The second they knew what I was, they'd throw me out, and then where would I be? Speaking of which,
where are we?
I pulled myself back up into the seat.
Where are the others?
Chubb sat in one of the middle seats, dividing his time between the book in his lap and the world of trees just outside the tinted car window. I moved, trying to follow his gaze, but there was nothing to see.
Somewhere near the lovely city of Kingwood, West Virginia, Lee and Suzume are checking something out, he said.
I had leaned forward without realizing it, trying to see what he was reading. It had been years since I'd even seen a book, let alone read from one. Chubbs wasn't having it, though. The moment my shoulder brushed his, he snapped the book shut and turned to give me the nastiest stink eye he could muster. Even with his two small glasses and my knowledge of his little fancy lady kit under the front seat, I reminded myself there was a distinct possibility he was capable of killing me with his brain.
How long did I sleep? A day, Chubb said. The general wants you up and ready to report to duty. He's in one of his go-go-go moods. You may only be a green, but he's expecting you to help.
I chose my next words carefully, ignoring the smug look on his face. Let him think that if it made him feel better. He was smarter, there was no debate about that. He probably had years of education on me, had read hundreds more books, and could remember enough math to actually be useful. But as small and stupid as he made me feel, there was no ignoring the fact that all it would take is one touch, and I could have read him the contents of his brain.
Liam's a blue, right? I began. Are you and Zoo both blue, too?
No. He frowned, and it took him several moments to decide whether or not to reveal his next bit of information.
Suzume's yellow.
I sat up a little straighter.
You had yellows at your camp?
Chubbs grunted.
No, Green, I just lied to you. Yes, we had yellows.
But that didn't make sense. After all, if they took the yellows out of Thurmond, why wouldn't they have taken them from all the camps? I began, unsure of how to ask this. When she first pulled me into the van, I thought she was just shy and skittish around strangers, but I hadn't heard her utter a single word in the entire time I had been with them. Not to me, not to Chubbs, not even to Liam.
Did they do something to the yellows?
To her? The only way the van's atmosphere could have electrified faster was if I had thrown a live wire into a full bathtub. Chubbs turned toward me sharply, drawing his arms up, crossing them in front of his chest. The look he leveled at me over his glasses would have turned a weaker soul to stone.
That?
He said slowly, precisely, I thought, to make sure I understood.
Is absolutely none of your business.
I held up my hands, retreating.
Were you even thinking about what could happen to her when you followed her?
He pressed on.
Do you even care that your friends in the green SUV would have gladly scooped her up?
The people in the green SUV, I began, and would have finished had the door not suddenly rolled open behind us. Chubbs let out a noise that could only be described as a squawk, and just about flew into the front passenger seat. By the time he had settled himself down, his eyes were almost as wide as Zoo's, who stood watching him from the door.
"Don't do that," he gasped, clutching his chest. "Give us a little warning, will you?"
Zoo raised an eyebrow in my direction, and I raised one right back at her. After a moment, she seemed to remember the reason she had come and began waving us outside, her bright, sunny color glove flashing. Chubbs unbuckled his seatbelt with an aggravated sigh.
I told him this was a waste of time. They said Virginia, not West Virginia.
He turned his gaze back toward me.
By the way, he added, that SUV was tan. That's some photographic memory you have.
An excuse leaped to my throat, but he cut me off with a knowing look and slammed the door behind him. I jumped out of the van and followed Zoo. As my feet sunk into the mud and sad, yellowed grass, I had my first good look around. A large wooden sign, leaning back like someone had nearly run it over, said East River Camping Grounds. But there was no river, and it certainly wasn't your typical camping ground. If anything, it was, or once was, an old trailer and RV park. The farther we walked from the minivan, the more nervous I felt. It wasn't raining, but my skin felt clammy and cold to the touch. All around us, as far as my eyes could see, were the burned-out silver and white husks of former homes and vehicles. Several of the larger, more permanent trailers had entire walls ripped or charred away, revealing kitchens and living rooms with their insides still intact, if not waterlogged and infested with animals and slowly rotting leaves from the nearby trees. It was like a mass grave of past lives. Even though screen doors had been ripped off or warped, even though some RVs knelt on whatever tires had been slashed, there were still signs of life all around. Walls were decorated with pictures of happy and smiling families. A grandfather clock was still counting time. Pots were still on stoves. A small swing set remained undisturbed and lonely on the far end of the grounds. Zoo and I navigated around an RV that was now on its side, following a path of deep footsteps in the mud. I took one look at the RV's rusted bones and immediately turned away, my hand tightening around Zoo's gloves. She looked up at me with a questioning look, but I only shook my head and said, "Spooky." When the rain came, it hammered against the metal bodies around us, rattling a few of the weaker roofs and screens. I jumped back with a yelp when a trailer's door fell into our path. Zoo only jumped over it and pointed ahead to where Chubbs and Liam were locked in conversation. It had taken me a second to recognize Liam. Under his jacket, he wore a blue sweatshirt with a hood pulled up over what looked like a Redskins hat. I had no idea where he managed to find them, but a pair of aviator sunglasses obscured a good portion of his face from view.
"Isn't it?" Chubbs said. "I told you."
"They said it was at the east edge of the state," Liam insisted, "and they could have meant West Virginia."
"Or they could have been screwing with us," Chubbs finished for him.
He must have heard us approaching because he jumped and turned around. The moment he locked eyes with me, he scowled.
"Morning, sunshine," Liam called. "Sleep okay?"
Zoo darted out ahead of me, but I could feel my feet begin to drag with an invisible weight as I came toward them. I crossed my arms over my chest, steadying myself enough to ask, "What is this place?" This time it was Liam who blew out a sigh.
"Well, we were hoping it was East River.
The East River, I mean." "That's in Virginia," I said, looking down at my shoes. "The peninsula. It empties into the Chesapeake Bay."
"Thank you, Detective Duh."
Chubbs shook his head. "We're talking about the Slip Kids, East River."
"Hey."
Liam's voice was sharp.
"Lay off, buddy. We really didn't know anything about it until we were out of camp either."
Chubbs crossed his arms over his chest and looked away.
"Whatever."
"What is it?" I felt Liam turn his attention back to me, which immediately prompted me to turn my attention back to Zoo, who mostly just looked confused.
"Get a grip," I ordered myself.
"Stop it." I wasn't afraid of them, not even Chubbs. Maybe a bit when I thought too hard about how easily I could ruin their lives, or pictured their horrified reactions if they were to figure out what exactly I was. I just didn't know what to say or how to act around them. Every movement and word on my part felt uncomfortable, shrill or sharp, and I was beginning to worry that the feelings of hesitancy and awkwardness were never going to lift. I already felt like the freak of freaks without the added realization that I lacked the basic ability of communicating normally with other human beings. Liam sighed, scratching the back of his head.
"We first heard about East River from some kids in our camp. Supposedly, and I mean supposedly, it's a place where any kids on the outside can go and live together. The Slip Kid, who runs the show, can get you in touch with your folks without the PSFs finding out about it. There's food, a place to sleep. Well, you get the picture. The problem is finding it. We think it's somewhere in this area, thanks to a few fairly unhelpful blues we ran across in Ohio. It's the kind of thing that, if you're in the know, you're not supposed to talk about it," I finished.
"But who's the Slip Kid?"
Liam shrugged. "No one knows. Or, well, I guess people know, they just don't say. The rumors about him are pretty incredible, though. The PSFs gave him that nickname because he, supposedly, escaped their custody a good 4 times. I was too stunned to say anything to that.
Kind of puts the rest of us to shame, huh?
I was feeling really bad about myself until somebody told me the rumors about him. Liam shuddered. Supposedly, he's one of those. An orange. That single word thundered down around me, freezing me in place. Liam went on to say something else with a lot less disgust, but I couldn't hear him over the roar in my ears. I didn't hear a word of what he was saying. Slip kid. Someone who could help kids get home, if they had a home to return to, and parents who remembered them and wanted them, a life to reclaim, and, potentially, one of the last orange kids out there. I squeezed my eyes shut, pressing the heels of my palms against them for good measure. I didn't qualify for his help, not in the traditional way. Even if I could get in touch with my parents, it wasn't like they would welcome a girl they considered a stranger back with open arms. There was Grams, but I had no way of knowing where she was now. After finding out what I had done, would she even want me?
"Why do you even need this guy's help?"
I interrupted, still feeling lightheaded. "Can't you just go home?"
"Use your brain, Green," Chubb said. "We can't go home because PSFs are probably watching our parents."
Liam shook his head, finally taking his sunglasses off. He looked exhausted, the skin under his eyes baggy and bruised.
"You'll have to be really careful, okay? Do you even want me to drop you off at a bus station? Because we'd be happy."
"No,"
Chubb said. "We most certainly would not. We've already wasted enough time on her, and she's the reason we have the league after us, too."
A sharp pain sprouted on the left side of my chest, just above my heart. He was right, of course. The best option for everyone would be to drop me off at the nearest bus station and be done with it. But it didn't mean I didn't want to, or need to, find this slip kid as badly as they did. But I couldn't ask to stay. I couldn't impose on them any more than I already had, or risk ruining them with the invisible fingers that seemed bent on tearing apart every single connection I managed to make. If the league caught up to us and took them in, I'd never forgive myself. Never. If I was going to find the slip kid, I was going to have to do it by myself. You'd think I'd be used to the thought of taking on each day with no one beside me, that it'd be some kind of relief not to be in constant danger of sliding into someone else's head. But I didn't want to. I didn't want to step out under the gray, overcast sky alone and feel its chill work its way under my skin.
"So," I said, squinting at the nearest trailer, "this isn't East River."
"It might have been once," Liam said. "They could move around from time to time. I hadn't really considered it."
"Or," Chubbs groused, "they could have already been taken back into PSF custody. Maybe this was East River, and now there is no more East River, and we're going to have to find a way to deliver Jack's letter and get home by ourselves. Only we won't ever because of the skip tracers, and we'll all be thrown back into camp. Only this time, though..."
"Thank you, Chuckles," Liam cut in, "for that rousing burst of optimism."
"I could be right," he said. "You have to acknowledge that."
"But you could also be wrong," Liam said, dropping a reassuring hand on Zoo's head. "In any case, that's what we're going with now. This was just a false alarm. Let's see if we can find anything useful, then we'll hit the road."
"Finally. I'm sick of wasting time on things that don't matter."
Chubb shoved his hands into his trouser pockets and stalked toward me. If I hadn't jumped out of the way, his shoulder would have knocked into mine and sent me stumbling back. I turned, my eyes following his path as he kicked rubbish and rocks out of his way. Liam was suddenly standing next to me, his own arms crossed over his chest.
"Don't take it personally," he said.
I must have made a sound of disbelief, because he continued. "I mean, okay, the kid is basically a grumpy 70-year-old man trapped in a 17-year-old's body.
but he's only being this insufferable to try to push you out. Yeah, well, I thought, it's working. And I know it's not an excuse, but he's as stressed and freaked out as the rest of us, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, all of this acid he's throwing your way, it's coming from a good place. If you stick it out, I swear you won't find a more loyal friend. But he's scared as hell about what'll happen, especially to Zoo, if we're caught again. I looked up at that, but Liam was already walking away toward a far row of battered trailers. For one crazy second, I thought about following him, but I'd caught Zoo out of the corner of my eye, her bright yellow gloves swinging at her sides. She jumped in and out of the trailers, stood on her toes to peer into the smashed windows of the RVs, and even, at one point, started to crawl into wreckage of an RV that looked like it had been split in half by a tornado. The metal roof, which was hanging on by what looked like two flimsy joints, was swaying and bouncing under the combined forces of rain and wind. Although she had the hood of her oversized sweatshirt pulled snug over her head, I watched as one of Zoo's gloved hands came up and brushed the side of her face, as if she was pushing a strand of hair out of her eyes. It didn't strike me as strange until she did it again, only to pale slightly as she caught herself. The conversation I had tried to have with Chubbs in the van came crashing back to me. "Hey, Zoo," I began, only to stop short. How were you supposed to ask a little kid if someone had played slice and dice with her brain without trampling over an already painful memory? The truth of it was, they only shaved kids' heads at Thurmond when they wanted to do some poking around inside of their skulls. They had all but stopped by the time I arrived, but it had taken a while for the older kids' hair to grow back out. Somewhere, in the back of my mind, I had wondered if this wasn't the case with her after all, if the reason she couldn't speak was because they had crossed a few wires they shouldn't have, or gone a step too far in the name of finding a cure. "Why did they cut your hair?" I asked finally. I knew plenty of girls that would have preferred shorter hair, myself included, but aside from an annual haircut for the girls, we didn't have much say in the matter. The way that Zoo seemed to stroke her ghost hair made me think she hadn't had much say either. If she had been upset by my question, she didn't show it. Zoo brought her hands up to her head and began to scrub at it, making a face of acute discomfort. Seeing that I wasn't getting it, she slipped one hand out of its glove and went to work scratching at her scalp. "Oh," I said. "Oh, you mean your group had lice?" She nodded. "Yikes," I said. It made sense, but it still didn't explain why she couldn't open her mouth and answer me. "I'm so sorry." Zoo lifted a shoulder in a half-hearted shrug, then turned and bounded up into the nearest RV. The door wobbled and protested as I followed her in, squealing as its hinges worked. Zoo made a face, and I made one back at her in agreement. The whole home smelled sweet, but not pleasant, almost like rotten fruit. I started in the small central living space, opening and closing the pale cabinet doors. The seat cushions were done up in an obnoxiously bright purple, but they, like the small TV hanging on the wall across from them, were coated with dust and dirt. The only thing out on the counter was a single coffee mug. The back sleeping area was equally spare, a few cushions, a lamp, and a closet with a red dress, a white button-down shirt, and a whole fleet of empty hangers. I had only just reached for the shirt when I saw it at the edge of my vision. Someone had attached it to the RV's windshield in place of a rearview mirror. It was nothing that would have seemed odd from the outside looking in, or drawn attention unless you were really, truly staring at it. But inside, standing only a few feet away from it, I was close enough to see the red light at the base of it, close enough to see that camera inside was pointed toward everything and everyone that passed by on the road in front of it. And if I could see Betty from where I was, so could it. The camera's shape was slightly different from the ones they had at Thurmond, but close enough to make me think the same people were behind it. I looked down at Zoo, and she looked up at me. "Stay right here," I said, reaching for the coffee pot on the table. I crossed the RV in three steps, the coffee pot out in front of me like a sword. I kicked aside a few empty boxes and trash, and saw, mixed in with the litter of plastic bags, a small red glove.
too small for any adult's hand. I didn't realize the pot was still in my hand until I brought it down against the device and smashed it. The cheap glass body broke off and fell to the ground, leaving me holding its handle. The black bulb stayed perched exactly where it was, only now the camera's eye rotated to face me. "It's on," I thought through the haze of panic, searching for something else to smash it with. "It's recording." I didn't remember calling for her, but Zhu appeared at my side in an instant, stuffing something under the front of her oversized sweatshirt. She must have recognized it, too, because before I could even get another word in, she was pulling off one of her yellow rubber gloves and reaching toward it.
"Don't!"
I'd never seen a yellow use their abilities before. I'd suffered the after effects, of course, power outages across the camp, white noise when the camp controllers thought one of them had done it on purpose, but they had been gone so long at Thurmond that I had stopped trying to imagine what it must have been like for them to speak the mysterious language of electricity. Zhu's fingers had only brushed against it, but the camera began to let out a high-pitched whine. There was a bolt of white-blue that seemed to leap from her bare finger to the camera's outer shell. That same crackling line whipped down over the plastic, causing it to smoke and warp under its heat. Without warning, all of the lights in the RV flashed on, glowing so molten hot that they shattered. The vehicle began to cough and sputter, shaking under our feet, as its engine found itself miraculously revived after a long sleep. Zhu jammed her hand back into its glove and crossed her arms over her chest. She squeezed her eyes shut, as if willing it all to stop. But we didn't have time to wait around and see if it would. I moved toward the door, grabbing the front of her sweatshirt to all but drag her out of the RV. She was still stumbling as I pulled her around to the end that faced the road and Black Betty. "Come on," I said, not letting her slow. The brightness was gone from her face, blown out like a candle. "It's okay," I lied. "We just need to get the others." There was a camera installed in the front windshield of every trailer in that front row. I spotted them one by one as we ran back toward Betty. But there was no point trying to get rid of them now. Whoever was going to see us had likely already seen us. We just had to get out of there, and fast. "They could be old," I tried telling myself, throwing Betty's door open. "They could have been installed years ago in case of robberies. Who knew where the video they recorded was being sent? Maybe nowhere at all." And at the same time, my heart was beating out a completely different track. "They're coming. They're coming. They're coming." I thought about yelling for the others, but they could have been anywhere in the park. I climbed into the van after Zhu and did the only other thing that seemed to make sense in that moment. I banged the heel of my palm against the wheel. The high whine of Betty's horn shook the sleepy landscape awake. A cluster of birds flew up from nearby trees, hitting the sky at the same moment I began beating out a faster, more insistent rhythm. Chubbs appeared first, booking it down one aisle of RVs, and Liam a second later, a few rows over. When they saw that it was still just us, they both slowed down. An annoyed look crossed Chubbs' face. I leaned out of the open driver's side window and shouted, "We have to go! Now!" Liam said something to Chubbs that I didn't hear, but they did as they were told. I stayed crouched between the two front seats as the boys jumped inside. "What?" Liam was almost out of breath. "What's wrong?" I pointed to the nearest trailer. "They have cameras installed," my voice rasped. "In every one of them." Chubbs sucked in a sharp breath. "You're sure?" Liam's voice was calm. Too calm. I could tell he was forcing it, even as his fingers fumbled to put the keys in the ignition. The van's back tires spun against the mud as he threw it into reverse. I went tumbling onto my backside with the force of his acceleration. "Oh my God," Chubbs was saying. "I can't believe it. We got Hansel and Gretel. Oh my God. Do you think it was her?" "No," Liam said. "No. She's sneaky for a skip tracer, but this is something else." "They could have been there for a while," I said, just as we found the highway again. It was empty and open in front of us, a gaping mouth ready to swallow us whole. They could have been spying on the people that lived there. Maybe that really was East River. Or it was just a trap for kids looking for the real East River. Liam propped his elbow against the door panel and his chin against his palm. When he spoke, the hundreds of snaking cracks in the windshield cut up his reflection. He pushed the minivan up into a faster speed, causing the wind to whistle through the bullet hole. Just keep your eyes open and let me know if you see anyone or anything acting suspect.
Defined suspect. The rows of shuttered houses? A shot-up minivan?
I knew we should have waited until it was dark, Chubb said, tapping his fingers against the passenger seat window.
I knew it. If those cameras were on, they probably got the license plate number and everything.
I'll take care of the plates, Liam promised.
Chubb's lips parted, but he said nothing, only resting his head against the window. Should I be looking for PSFs? I asked as we drove over another railroad track.
Worse, Chubb sighed. Skip tracers. Bounty hunters.
The PSFs are stretched pretty thin by all accounts, Liam explained. Same with the National Guard and what's left of the local police. I don't know that they'd send a unit all the way out here on a tip, and unless they just so happen to have a resident bounty hunter in this neck of the woods, we're going to be fine. Those were famous last words if I had ever heard them. The reward for turning in a kid is $10,000. Chubbs twisted around to look at me.
And the whole country is broke as a joke. We are not going to be fine.
I heard a train in the distance, its horn so similar to the ones that had passed by Thurmond at all hours of the night. It was enough for me to dig my fingernails into the skin of my thighs and squeeze my eyes shut until the nausea passed. I didn't even realize the conversation had rolled on without me until I heard Liam ask, "You okay, Green?" I reached up and wiped my face, wondering if the wetness there was from the rain or if I'd been crying without realizing it. I didn't say anything as I crawled to the rear seat. I didn't jump into their conversation about where they would need to look next for East River, though I wanted to. There were hundreds, thousands, millions of places the slip kid could have set up camp, and I wanted to help them puzzle it out. I wanted to be part of it. But I couldn't ask, and I needed to stop lying to myself, because every second I stayed with them was another chance for them to discover that skip tracers and PSFs weren't the real monsters of the world. No. One of the real ones was sitting in their back seat. For once, the music was off. It was the silence from the speakers that unnerved me, more than the deserted roads or the empty shells of repossessed houses. Liam was a constant stream of motion, looking around the abandoned small towns we drove through, glancing at the gas level, fiddling with the turn signal, fingers dancing on the steering wheel. At one point, his eyes flashed toward mine in the rearview mirror. It was just for an instant, but I felt the small twinge in my stomach as sharply as I would have if he had taken a soft finger and run it down the length of my open palm. My face was flushed, but something inside of me had gone very cold. It had been half a second, no more, but it was plenty long enough to notice the way his eyes had darkened with something that might have been frustration. Chubbs was in the front seat, folding and unfolding something in his lap over and over again, almost like he didn't realize he was doing it. "Will you cut that out?" Liam burst out, agitated. "You'll rip it!" Chubbs stopped immediately.
"Can't we just try? Do we need the slip kid for this?
Do you really want to risk it?"
"Jack would have."
"Right?" But Jack..." Liam's voice trailed off.
"Let's just play it safe. He'll help us when we get there."
"If we get there," Chubbs huffed. "Jack?" I didn't realize I had said it aloud until Liam's eyes looked up at me in the rearview mirror.
"It's none of your business," Chubbs said, and left it at that.
Liam was only a little more forthcoming.
"He was our friend. In our room at camp, I mean.
We're just trying to get in touch with his dad."
It's one of the reasons we need to hit up the slip, kid. I nodded toward the sheet of paper. But before you guys broke out, he wrote a letter?
The three of us each did, Liam said, in case one of us backed out at the last minute and didn't want to come or didn't make it out.
Which Jack did not. Chubb's voice could have cut steel. Behind him, house after gorgeous colonial house passed in rapid-fire succession, their colors winking at us through her window.
Anyway, Liam cleared his throat. We're trying to put his letter in his dad's hands. We tried going to the address Jack gave us, but the house had been repossessed. He left a note saying he was going to D.C. for work, but no new address or phone number. That's why we need the slip kid's help. To find where he is now.
You can't just mail it?
They started scanning mail for this exact reason about 2 years after you went to Thurmond, Liam explained. The government reads all, speaks all, and writes all. They've crafted a lovely little story about how we're all being saved and reprogrammed back into sweet little darlings at camp, and they don't want anyone to get wind of the truth.
I honestly had no idea what to say to that.
Sorry, I mumbled. I didn't mean to give you a shakedown about it.
It's okay, Liam said after the silence had stretched to the point of breaking. It's fine.
There wasn't a way to explain how I knew. Maybe it was the way Liam's hands tightened on the steering wheel, or how he kept glancing in his side mirror throughout the conversation, long after a silver car had passed us from the other direction. It could have been the way his shoulder sagged, sloping down in a way that was so defeated. I just knew, long before I caught his worried eyes in the rearview mirror. Slowly, without disturbing Zoo and Chubbs, as they watched an endless stream of forest pass by the side windows, I crouched between the two front seats again. Liam met my gaze for a split second, nodding in the direction of his side mirror.
See for yourself, he seemed to say.
So I did. Trailing behind us, back about 2 car lengths, was an old white pickup truck. With the rain fogging up the air between the two cars, I couldn't tell if there were 1 or 2 men inside. They looked like little more than 2 black ants from where I was sitting.
Interesting, I said, keeping my voice even.
Yep, he said, his jaw clenched, the muscles of his neck strained.
Gotta love West Virginia. Glorious mountain state. Land o' many John Denver songs.
Maybe, I began slowly, you should pull over and look at a map. It was one way of feeling out the situation. Liam was about to turn onto George Washington Highway, slightly wider than the twisting road we were leaving. If the truck was following us, they wouldn't be able to stop without revealing it. In any case, whoever was driving the truck wasn't being aggressive about it. If he was a bounty hunter, as Liam apparently thought, they were probably feeling us out, too. We continued up Gorman Road, following its natural curve. Black Betty slowed in anticipation of the upcoming turn. Liam hesitated half a second before flipping his turn signal on. I looked in the mirror, my heart lifting when I saw the truck turn its other blinker on. They were turning right. We were going left. Liam blew out a long sigh, finally sitting back against his seat as the minivan reached the intersection of the highway and the road. There was another car turning off the highway, a small silver Volkswagen. Both Liam and I threw up a hand to block the intense glint of the sun against its windows.
"Okay, old man River." Liam gave the car an impatient wave. "Go ahead and turn before the next century." "No, take your time. Shave. Contemplate the universe."
Leonard Skinnerd was blasting through the pickup truck's open windows as it pulled up alongside us, creaking and groaning in the way all old cars seem to do. Freebird, of course. It had to be Dad's favorite. 2 seconds into the damn song, and it was like I was back in the front seat of his squad car, cruising around town. That was the only time I got to listen to the good music, when it was just the two of us, cruising. Mom hated the stuff. A laugh bubbled up inside of me as I watched the driver bob his head in time with the music. He howled the words at the top of his lungs, exhaling each lyric with a puff of cigarette smoke. And then it was replaced by a different sound, a shriek of sorts. I looked up just in time to see the Volkswagen slam on its brakes right in front of us, jolting to a stop and sending another blinding glare of sunlight our way.
"You have got to be kidding me!"
Liam made as if to press his hand down on the horn, but not before the driver of the Volkswagen rolled down his window and pointed something black and gleaming at us.
"No."
The world went into sharp focus. Sound evaporated around me.
"No!"
I reached up and slapped Black Betty's radio button on, turning it up as loud as it would go. Liam and Chubbs both started yelling, but I knocked Liam's hand away before he could switch it off. The white noise cut straight through the music from the speakers, tearing at our ears. Not as loud or as powerful as I was used to, and not even close to as bad as it had been last time, but still there, still agonizing. My radio trick couldn't drown it out, not completely. The others crumbled around me, shriveling at the first piercing shriek. Liam fell forward against the wheel, mashing his hands up against his ears. Chubbs knocked his head into the passenger seat window, as if trying to ram the noise out of his head. I felt Black Betty began to drift forward, only to jerk to a stop when Liam hit the brakes instead of the gas. The door opened beside me, and a pair of arms circled Chubbs's waist, trying to untangle him from the seatbelt. I pulled myself up off the floor and lashed a hand out, catching the man's cheek and raking my fingernails down as hard as I could. It was enough to startle the truck driver, the same one that had been nodding his head to Freebird 2 seconds before, into dropping Chubbs. He was left half-hanging in his seat, half-hanging out. The driver stumbled back against the bed of his truck, his words drowned out by the thunderstorm of noise that had settled over the three cars. It was only then that I saw the badge hanging around his neck on a silver cord, and the bright red sigh stitched there. They weren't skip tracers. Sigh. PSF. Camp. Thurmond. Capture. The man from the Volkswagen had opened the driver's side door of the van and was trying to unhook Liam's seatbelt. He wasn't large in any sense of the word. He looked like he could have been an accountant, with thick glasses and hunched shoulders from spending too many hours at a desk. But he didn't need strength, not when he was holding the black megaphone in his hands. Some of the PSFs at Thurmond carried the noise machines around with them, blasting them at small, rowdy groups, or just to see a few kids squirm. What did they care? They couldn't hear it. Every nerve in my body was singing, but I launched my elbow into the chest of the pickup truck driver. He fell back again, and I pulled the door shut and locked it. I only had a second to look back at Zoo as I dove across Liam's body fist first. I nailed Volkswagen in the glasses, knocking them off his face. Somewhere behind me, pickup truck had moved onto the sliding door, and this time he wasn't empty-handed. Zoo didn't flinch as the rifle was pointed in her face. By the way she was moaning, her eyes scrunched up and her yellow gloves curled over her ears in agony, I don't think she was seeing straight. I didn't know what to do. My hands were on Liam, trying to shake him back into consciousness. His eyes flashed open, clear and so blue, but it was only for an instant. The megaphone was suddenly 2 inches from my face, and the white noise sunk into my brain like an axe. My bones went to jelly. I didn't register the fact I had fallen over Liam until I was there. The only thing louder than the white noise, than the radio, than Chubb's screams, was the sound of Liam's heart racing. I squeezed my eyes shut again, my fingers curling into the soft leather of Liam's coat. Half of me wanted to push away, put enough distance between us that I had no chance of sliding into his mind. But the other half of me, the desperate